Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach.
An African woman while I was away, so we came back together. I trained as a psychiatric nurse. She produced our first child, our first son, and then we went back to Africa, and I continued my career in Africa and working in psychiatry and helping to develop psychiatric nurse training across the country. And the training of psychiatric medical assistants, who are sort of barefoot psychiatrists. So that was, again, the most interesting, challenging, and developmentally powerful experience of working in mental health in Africa, learning more about African society, of being socialised into an African family too, having African in-laws and African brother-in-law and lots of sisters-in-law. That was an enormously powerful and helpful experience to me that changed my life completely.
Okay, you've also mentioned to me in the past that the embodied physical aspects of nursing is very important to you too.
Yeah, it is. But it's nursing is very practical. There's a technical side to nursing, but at its heart, nursing is an embodied profession. You know, the prime vehicle for the expression of nursing care is through one's own body. And one touches people, one holds people, one, of course, works on people's bodies with one's hands, you know, sometimes using equipment, sometimes not. And you always as a main ingredient of the work that one does as a nurse is through this very privileged, intimate connection with other people, with their embodiment too.
Yeah.
And always been very important to me. You know, I am a practical person. I like practical contact with people. I like the experience of working with people, with my own body and with theirs. And that's even in psychiatric nursing, that's important. Primarily in psychiatric nursing, that's important, although it's very much undervalued. But yeah, that's been a key ingredient in my work and an important dimension to my experience of my life and my experience of our shared world. Yeah.
And did that embodied nature of your work have a connection with your interest in Buddhism?
Yes, it did. It's hard to articulate this, Barry, because although meditation is to some extent seen as is a key, you know, the key practices in Buddhism, one of the key practices in Buddhism is the practice of meditation. The embodied nature of meditation is sometimes subordinated to this idea that meditation is something about the mind, you know, something about what we do with our heads, and that I've always found that a bit difficult to accept. You know, this in a sense, I think perhaps that may be a Western reinterpretation or misinterpretation of the teaching of the Buddha. But yes, it's that connect, that embodied, that our embodied nature, the energetic dimension, you know, the energetic substrate of our experience and what we are and who we are and what it's all about. That embodiment is so important to me, and it was answered very directly by Buddhism. Buddhism spoke to me. I understood Buddhism to be about that energy, you know, the energy that produces, the energy that thoughts are, the energy that sensations are, and our corporeal embodiment of energy. That's so important in nursing and in Buddhism.
And was that a gradual thing? Your interest in Buddhism, was that around the same time you became a psychiatric nurse?
I've always been very discrepant, Barry. I've always been what narky, I think, is a word you might use. I've always been a yes but man. Although I'm profoundly conservative in some ways, I'm always questioning things. I'm always looking for alternative explanations for what's going on. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, Buddhism does that, doesn't it? Buddhism's got that constant inquiry, the constant investigation into what's behind what we think is front, and that runs through psychiatry, it runs through nursing, it runs through Buddhism.
You can see how the schools of skepticism and Buddhism interact in many ways, can't you?
You can.
But
yeah.
At that time, how did you deal with the more dogmatic or metaphysical aspects of Buddhism?
Yeah, well, the thing is that I haven't wanted to. I haven't wanted, except here and there. I mean, I can't say that the metaphysical side of Buddhism doesn't have some appeal to me, but the way it's expressed, the middle way, we'll come to that later on, but this is where the middle way helps, is that the metaphysical thing has been crystallized into a series of rigid, dogmatic, unchanging rituals, and that I can't abide by that. I can't go with that. I haven't wanted it, to me. There's something fluid and moving and mysterious about our experience. And when it's pinned down and chanted and things like that, I can't deal with it. You know, I don't want it really. So, yes, I think I don't confess this to many people because everybody the less I call myself a Buddhist, sometimes I'll say to people, I'm not really a Buddhist like other Buddhists, and I've never taken refuge, and that is, people say, well, you can't be a Buddhist then. You know, you can't be a Buddhist unless you've taken refuge. To be a Buddhist, you have to take refuge. If you haven't taken refuge, you haven't shown commitment to Buddhism. If you haven't got commitment to Buddhism, then you can't be a Buddhist. But I think, if that's the case, then I'm not a Buddhist. But then everybody says I am. So if they say I am, I just say, oh, all right, then, if you say so. But the metaphysics doesn't interest me. The metaphysics, in a sense, it doesn't interest me if it's dogma.
Yeah.
If it's dogma. If it's mystery, then...
Yeah, I say you did become a Buddhist chaplain at some stage.
I did, yes. And that was an offshoot of my interest in the welfare of psychiatric patients, because there's a lot in common between people with long-term mental illnesses, you know, especially sort of personality disorder and bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. These are long-term problems; they don't go away.
Yeah.
And a lot of prisoners, lots of people in prison, lots of my patients ended up in prison. And an opportunity came for me to apply to become a Buddhist prison chaplain with Angulimala, the Buddhist Prison Chaplaincy Organisation.
Okay.
And I applied on impulse, and I was accepted and assigned to two prisons in Essex. I told the abbot, the venerable Kemadamo at that time, Venerable Kemadamo Mahatera, and I told him, I said, I've never taken refuge. I can't remember what he called him, Your Highness or Bantu. And he was very gracious. I really thought he'd say, well, you know, you have to get out of my monastery, you know. But he didn't. He said, well, it's what happens in your heart that's important, Peter. He said, if your heart's there, he said, that's the important thing. I thought that was a wonderful thing. Uh-huh. That really made me. That helped me to understand that, you know, the traditions and the power and the value of the traditions but I became a prison chaplain, and I did that for about 5 or 6 years, Barry, in two prisons here in Essex, a woman's prison, and a bog standard prison in Chelmsford. I say bog standard because these are the sort of locality prisons, you know, they have one in each major town and or city, and they're sort of the they're the sort of Sainsbury's and Tesco's of the prison world. they're very busy places. They're like in a sense they're a bit like mainline railway stations, you know, people come and people go, and like ships in the night, you know, awful places. But there you go.
Was the chaplaincy, working in prisons, a worthwhile experience?
Was a worthwhile experience, but it's a challenge to prison chaplaincy is a challenge because prisons are very difficult places to work in. You know, the people are good-hearted, the staff are good-hearted, everybody's well-intentioned, the prisoners are good, but the prisons are not places where things get done. You know, they're it's very difficult to have access, a meaningful access to prisoners. In fact, almost everybody that works in prison says that, you know, they don't have many collectors with prisoners. You have to make it up as you go along. You have to deal with the circumstances you find yourself in, and they're often very inimical to anything really meaningful. Especially any long term commitment to anything meaningful is pretty well a dead duck. You know, prisoners are moved capriciously for security reasons. I mean, you come in prison one day and move to another prison the next. They don't know they're going. Nobody knows they're going until they've gone. You say, where's Joe Blobs? You know, oh, he's gone. You know, he's gone to so-and-so. He's gone to Winchester, or he's gone to somewhere else. And that's it, you know. So long-term commitment is very, very difficult. Prisoners know this. They have to deal with it. They deal with it in their own way, and we have to deal with it in our own way.
Yeah.
It's a different culture, a different way of life, a different way of looking at the world.
And are you still involved with the chaplaincy in some way today?
Yes, I moved to hospital chaplaincy about 10 years ago. I was asked by the chaplain of a local hospital if I would go and advise him on Buddhist. He was trying to put together a handbook about how to manage people from different faiths other than Christianity. So I went along. I was friends with him. I liked him very much. We got on like a house on fire, and he asked me if I'd be interested in a chaplaincy job at the prison. So I did. I was inducted into the chaplaincy, and I served as a chaplain. In fact, I'm still a chaplain now. It's about 10 years I've been at that particular hospital, and I'm a chaplain at a local mental hospital, which is a secure unit near where I live, and at another local general hospital here in near Battleham.
Yeah. And imagine your experience as a nurse dealing with people with, obviously there can be some very frightening situations in a hospital for a patient, that you can bring that experience to bear with your chaplaincy work.
You can, yes. Being a nurse helps, because although it's a completely different role, obviously, and you have to sort of sit on my hands, you know, my hands fidget because you're not encouraged to make physical contact with patients, or if a person is pumping up, you can't do it. You know what I mean? You have to stand back, in a sense. You have to, because that's leave that to the nurses, the doctors. But yes, knowing the hospital is very helpful. I'm familiar with the hospital routine, you know, and there are lots of do's and don'ts. If you haven't worked in a hospital, you don't know the hospital well. There's lots of do's and don'ts that aren't written down, lots of protocols, you know, and a lot of unofficial things that you have to negotiate your way around the hospital. Lots of prickly feelings, all sorts of things. But being a nurse does help in that respect. It does, and I'm not daunted by the smells or the appearance of patients or by all the equipment and so on. No, I can manage that all right. I find it is helpful. I think some patients find chaplaincy helpful and supportive, because some people don't. Some people don't want chaplains. They don't want anything to do with that. You know, people are very vulnerable. You feel very exposed when you're in hospital. And although on the one hand you need support, I've known people who said things to chaplains, even to nurses, you know, when they're afraid or when they're vulnerable, and they regret doing it. You know, they regret it afterwards. You know, they wish they kept it to themselves, you know, or spoken to the nearest and dearest. You know, so you have to be very careful. It's a very tricky area, and the idea that everybody's gagging for somebody to talk to about their deepest fears and their unresolved problems is a bit of an error in my book. Yeah.
No, I agree. Okay, just moving on. What prompted you to join the Middle Way Society?
Well, not having a sangha, you know, not being a signed up Buddhist who goes to regular temple meetings and pujas and things like this. Although I was a member of the Buddhist Society, the Buddhist Hospice Trust for a long time, I needed access to other people. I needed the companionship, friendship, support, and guidance of other Buddhists. So I've done a lot online, various groups, and I joined the secular Buddhist organization when it was set up a couple of years back by Ananta Chitta from Birmingham. And that was where I got to know about the Middle Way philosophy, and meeting up with Robert Ellis,
yeah,
on the Secular Buddhist Society website. It's a pity, really. The Secular Buddhist Society seems to be in the doldrums at the moment, Well, Robert Ellis and the Middle Way Society has got the wind in its sails, so I've jumped ship. I'm finding the Middle Way Society enormously resourceful. It is really, the answer to my prayers is perhaps a long metaphor, but this is something I needed to know. I needed to meet a long time ago. I'm very, very grateful and pleased that I've come the way of the Middle Way Society and revisited the Middle Way, the Buddha's teaching, in a way that meets my needs and meets contemporary needs, and is written in an idiom that makes absolute sense to me. Although, you know, I'm still learning, but this is my milieu. This is something that I think as its day has come.
That's wonderful. What do you think about the? I mean, you're coming at it from a Buddhist experience, but what do you think about the universality of the Middle Way? That, you know, there are a lot of people that are interested in the society that have no connection with Buddhism.
Well, I think that's right. That's important. I think that Buddhism is Buddhism as it's expressed, as it's sold, as it's advertised to the West and in the West, and as it's developed in the West, is a blind alley. It's a blind alley. It's another ism. You know, it's another lifestyle choice. I'm not disrespecting people who are sincere about it, but my experience of the various Buddhists and various sanghas is it's very superficial. You know, there isn't a real engagement with the work that needs to be done, the work that we need to do. You know, the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha expressed to his generation, to his people in his time, in a way that they understood. But there's nothing around that meets our contemporary needs, but the Middle Way Society supplies it.
How would you like to see the Middle Way Society develop?
I don't have any agenda for it. There's just a sense of energy around it and in it and with it that is going to find expression. How it will find expression, I don't know. I would not want to put any boundaries around it. I wouldn't want to apply necessarily any titles to it, and I wouldn't want it to become explicit in any sense.
Yeah, I like that, Peter.
I'm just going with it. I'm going with it. I'm letting it. I'm feeling it. I'm entering into it, and I'm feeling its reciprocal movement to me, with me, in me, and this is the way it should always feel for everybody. I think, Barry.
Yeah.
But if it does, it's great.
That makes sense to me. Can you tell us about miggling?
This came up with a bit of fun. I think you've got a finger in this. I think you've got a hand in niggling, yeah. Because you're a funny man. You know, you're full of energy. You're full of joyous energy that comes out as, you know, in being funny and seeing the funny side of things, in tickling people's ribs, and I really love that. You know, I think that's so important. And Buddhism is so po-faced. You know, so much Western Buddhism is completely po-faced. People have always got a downcast eye. They're always bowing to each other and things like this. But Buddhism is fun, but it's important. I think we all agree, didn't we, that we needed a word that expressed what we're doing that didn't dispirit or discourage people. And niggling floated to the surface. And we've got migglism, and we've got migglers, and we've got niggling this and niggling that. And I think that's forever. We don't want to go overboard about it.
Of course, it's nice
sometimes to drop it in. It's like a bubble. When it pops up, you know, it's a nice surprise. And I find I drop it into sentences here and there. It just emerges, you know. It just seems the right word to use.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And I've had great encouragement from you, and enormous encouragement from Robert as well.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Robert, as you know, is going to call his new book Migglism. So I'm very pleased about that, and I imagine you are too.
Oh, I'm delighted, I feel enormously in not just in the word, but in the approach that everyone has taken. You know, there is a sense of falling. Okay, it will have its day. It may subside. You know, things go through cycles, and so be it. But at this time, a bit of effervescence, a bit of energy, a bit of unruliness is not amiss, Barry. I know you. I think you'd agree. Yeah.
Okay. Just one last question, Peter. It's obvious from your comments and posts that you really enjoy the written word, and to my mind that you are a great communicator and employ the written word with great skill. Is it something you've always been drawn to?
Yes, I've always had the gift of the gab. There's no doubt about that. It's a double-edged sword. You know, it can be a hindrance. Sometimes I'm very pedantic, though, you know. I am over pedantic. You know, I get carried away. What is it? The expression they used to use: "Strangled by the old school tie." You know, and that's a danger. And I need to keep an eye on that. But yes, I do like the written word. I also like drama, Barry.
Yeah.
Drama and the dramatic. Acting on stage and acting things out, you know, impromptu things, this sort of psychodrama sort of thing.
Yeah,
that's always had very very great potency for me, and drama has figured at many of the crucial points, the crisis points, or points of new departure in my life. Drama has often played an important part, but the words, drama, Shakespeare, poetry, all that is it's all good stuff.
All good stuff.
I love it.
Okay.
Thanks for your kind words.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, thanks for talking to us today, Peter. It's been a lovely experience, and I'm just looking forward to carrying on interacting with you on the site and within the society.
Barry, you're a wonder. And yeah, thank you for your great catalytic skill, your great skill in facilitating and enabling us to talk about the things that's important to us. Thank you very much, Barry.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.